Forget the pressure to overhaul your life. The new year doesn't need a new you. It needs you. Grounded, supported, and ready to grow. Grow Therapy helps you make meaningful change at your pace and on your time. Whether it's your first time in therapy or your 50th, Grow makes it easier to find a therapist who fits you, not the other way around. They connect you with thousands of independent, licensed therapists across the U.S., offering both virtual and in-person sessions, nights, and weekends. You can search by what matters, like insurance, specialty, identity, or availability, to get started in as little as 2 days. And if something comes up, you can cancel up to 24 hours in advance at no cost. There are no subscriptions and no long-term commitments. You just pay per session. Grow helps you find therapy on your time. Whatever challenges you're facing, Grow Therapy is here to help. Grow accepts over 100 insurance plans, including Medicaid, in some states. Sessions average about $21 with insurance, and some pay as little as $0, depending on their plan. Visit growtherapy.com/get started today to get started. That's growtherapy.com/get started. growtherapy.com/get started. Availability and coverage vary by state and insurance plan.
The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Merkle Media.
I guess it's time to go back in time.
Are you telling me you built a time machine out of a DeLorean?
Time is but a stubborn illusion.
I have a lot of memories of the past.
People are time traveling within themselves.
Time travel is possible.
This was all circulating around the base that a giant had been killed, but no one was supposed to talk about it.
I saw three long bony fingers reach up underneath the door, curl up to grab it, and then disappear.
When he came over to me, dude, he slithered over to me.
And this giant comes out of the cave and they're all frozen. And he starts running and firing at this giant. Well, the giant moves. He's got a spear in one hand and he's running really fast and spears Dan and holds him up like this. Somebody yells, shoot him in the face, shoot him in the face. They basically decapitate him.
Got closer. When he got about 15 yards away from me, I raised that 12 gauge and I blow this head off.
I feel something pulling at my leg. And I look over and there are two small gray entities pulling at me. And they're literally, I'm getting pulled off the bed.
I reach my hand into this bush and I touch air. Couldn't breathe and I couldn't move because I know I'm seeing a monster.
Okay, I'm reloaded. Yep.
Welcome
Welcome to the show, everybody. You're listening to The Confessionals. I am your host, Tony Merkel. Thank you for being here. If you've had an encounter or a story you'd like to share with me on the show, go ahead and shoot me an email. My email address is theconfessionals@theconfessionalspodcast.com. That's theconfessionals@theconfessionalspodcast.com. Or go to the website, theconfessionalspodcast.com. Hit the contact section and you can reach me that way as well. Either way works for me. Just get a hold of me. And if you want more shows every week, go ahead and become a member to theconfessionalspodcast.com, because members get an extra show every Thursday on the website. So if that interests you, go to the website, theconfessionalspodcast.com, hit the join button, and become a member today. And if you're looking for some emergency preparedness food, we do offer that as well. All you got to do is go to preparewiththeconfessionals.com. That's preparewiththeconfessionals.com, and you can get yourself some emergency preparedness food, because in times like these, you never know when that supply chain is going to get cut out, and you want to be prepared. Now, this week we have a great show coming up for you, and hopefully you enjoy it while you listen to it, because when you're listening to this show, I'm more than likely going to be driving tractor trailer around somewhere in the Philadelphia area in a tropical storm. I just found out there's going to be a tropical storm hitting, and they said that any moment now it's going to start pouring at my house all day tomorrow. We'll see how it goes. But hopefully you enjoyed this show. We have Josh coming on the show first, and Josh has an experience where he witnessed the ghost of his dad, who is still alive and well. Very interesting story he has to share with us. And then we're going to bring on Daniel. And Daniel experienced with his family when he was a kid the screaming La Llorona. Let's get to it right now. All right, today we got a great guest coming on the show. Josh, how are you?
I'm good, Tony. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well, my friend. Doing well. So we got a chance to talk a little bit and get to know each other. We're like-minded individuals, and that's always nice to have that kind of conversation. You grew up in a paranormal household, and you've had little experiences here and there. As an adult, you had a pretty major experience, and we're not going to give away too much of the location of the house that we're talking about, because your parents are actually trying to sell it right now. So we want them to be able to sell the house, but we also want to hear the story. So Josh, what we're going to do is we're going to start off with the major thing that happened at the house that I'm very fascinated by, and then we're going to go into some of the more smaller things that happened to you, and even your parents had experiences as well, and you can share those experiences if you choose. Why don't you walk us into this experience where you had at the house as an adult?
Well, this house, beautiful old place north of Atlanta, and we moved in the late 70s, and I left home in the late 80s, and we would always have things happening back and forth. And I've been fortunate enough to go back and visit them, a few times during the year. And I was down in at the beginning of the summer of this year, and happened to be borrowing my father's car, and my wife had taken my car to go see some family, and went out to dinner with a customer in a store that I was seeing down in Atlanta. And when I got back, there's a separate garage, and the garage is probably about 50 feet from the back of their house. And it was dark out, probably around 8:30, 8:45. And I pulled into the garage, and as I was walking out, I happened to be on the phone with a friend of mine, and who's somebody you've got to talk to, because he's had some freaky things happen up in Seattle. But anyway, I'm walking out toward my parents' house, and before I even leave the garage, I'm looking at the back stairs, and there's a tree that's a topiary tree that's about 8 feet tall. And I see my father lean out from behind the tree, and I'm talking to my friend, and I said, well, my dad's messing around with me. I'm not really sure what's going on. And I'm looking at him, and he leans back in. So I wait for a second, and I'm pausing talking to my friend, and he's going, what is going on? And I said, this is really strange. My dad's messing with me. Well, I seen him lean out two more times. And as I walk toward the tree, I get to the tree and he's gone. There's nobody there. So, I thought it was a little strange in that my father, you know, doesn't really check on me. He used to check on me when I would, you know, get home when I was in high school. If I got home later, he'd be waiting in the back porch or something looking for me. But, you know, he never really was the type of father that would check in on me to make sure it was me coming in or whatever. So I go walking up the back stairs, and there's a back porch where my mother and father spend most of their time now. They've got a TV back there, and it's real comfortable and everything. And I walk in, and I ask my father, I said, were you just downstairs? He goes, no. He goes, I've been sitting here talking to your mom. And so I asked her, calling him out, I said, so was he just downstairs? And she goes, no, we've been sitting here talking for the last hour and a half. And I said, well, I just saw you downstairs. And he said, no, I was not there. Tony, there was nobody there. And I made that walk between the garage and the back porch in, you know, less than 10 seconds. My father's in great shape for a guy in his late 70s, but he's had a couple of hip replacements in one knee. He doesn't move that fast. Whatever this was gone. And I spoke to my wife about it when she got home, and I said, really weird thing happened. And I told her, and she said, well, what did he look like? So I'm describing him. I said, well, he's wearing a green sweater and a big white collar. I mean, a big white collar, and had on brass rimmed glasses and black hair. Well, Tony, my dad is in his late 70s. His hair is white as snow. He hasn't worn glasses in 30 years. And there's no way he would be wearing a sweater. It was warm. And my wife said, well, jokingly, because I don't think she believed me, she said, I think it was a time slip. And she said it jokingly, but it hit me. What I saw was my dad from the late 80s looking at me, getting home from somewhere. And the more I think about it, I just wonder, you know, the whole thing about ghosts and everything, and everybody's got their idea of what hauntings could be or what ghosts could be. You know, the one that I've heard a lot is that it's almost a recording, that, you know, the core of the earth is basically a magnet. And, you know, as magnetic tape will do, how it will record certain events. And I almost wonder if it was actually my dad, a recording of my dad from the 80s. And I don't know if you've ever heard of anything like that before.
I mean, it sounds like something that you would think I would have heard before, but I don't think I've ever heard it before.
Right.
I mean, wow. Wow. And so you and your wife are leaning towards time slip. Do you think time slip and time travel are two separate things, or would you think that's the same exact thing?
I think they're two different things. And I've thought about time travel, and, you know, people have said, well, you know, if time travel exists, or if time travel is created, wouldn't that mean then it has always been there? Because if somebody's created it, they're going to go wherever they want. So if somebody, you know, if somebody comes back, then it will always have been in existence. So it's way too meta to go into, I know, but I don't know if this was just a recording of something that happened when I was a teenager and got home from being out, you know. It's certainly not the first thing that happened there. Like you said, when we moved in the late 70s, and really not a lot happened until the early 80s. And the house was used as a Civil War hospital. There were Union soldiers that were stationed there. It's a big old place. It was a girls' school for a long time. The house was built, in the 1840s. And it's on the National Historical Registry, and it's a beautiful old place. There's a lot of wood, and there's a lot of stone inside this house. So who knows what those materials hang on to. But I can tell you that a couple of the first things I remember, the Historical Society sent my parents a letter at one point that was, I guess it was kept in a file. Someone found it and said, you own the house now, you should read this. And it was a letter to the family that the Union had basically taken the house from in the Civil War. They continued to live there, but they had to host the Union Army and are portioned up. And the Union Army had put a sentry on watch at night, and he would walk up and down the stairs and, you know, in the hallways and things. And these are the same hardwood floors that were in this house when it was built, you know, 100 and, you know, however many years ago, 108 years ago, whatever it is. And, the letter was from this soldier, and it was to the family. And he said, you know, I never minded, you know, looking after you. You were so good to me. I mean, just a beautiful letter, really, really nice, well-written, how much he loved the family, how they welcomed him in. Really just gorgeous letter, very sweet. And that night, this is one of the things that my parents heard, and my folks really won't admit to a lot of this, but there were a couple things that did happen, and one of them's real freaky. But this evening that we got this letter, everybody's in bed, and about 2 or 3 in the morning, of course, my father hears someone walking downstairs. All the bedrooms are upstairs. He hears someone walking downstairs, walk up the stairs, which is all wood, walk down to their bedroom door, to my sister's bedroom door, back down to my bedroom door, and then back to theirs, and stop outside the door. Well, my dad gets up, throws the door open, and of course, there's nobody there. It only happened the one time, but it was in, it coincided with the fact that they got this letter from this Union soldier who was a sentry. And that's the only thing that my parents heard that I didn't. And anything that I come up with, they're like, you're insane. My mother is very sweet, and she'll say, oh, you've got such an active imagination. And I always have. And, you know, and I guess I still do. But, you know, it's a little freaky that as soon as we get this letter, we hear footsteps in the house. And they weren't just off in the distance. They were really heavy. I mean, my dad said someone was walking, and I heard them. But that's one of the only things he'll admit to. The other thing that he will admit to is I was in high school, it's mid-80s, had to pick my sister up from somewhere and brought her back, and it was probably 9 or 10 at night. And there is a separate house that they converted into a little house that they, from time to time, they rented this house out, and it's really kind of a pool house. And they had a piano out there. So we get home, I pull in, my sister and I walk across the same driveway up the same back stairs I was talking about, and my dad says, listen. And he goes, just be real quiet. Listen, somebody's playing the piano out in the guest house, and it's just blaring. And it sounded great. Somebody knew what they were doing. And my dad said, somebody's out there. Somebody's, you know, out there drunk, and they're playing. They broke in. And he tells me, go in and grab a baseball bat or something. So I go grab, I think, a tennis racket. And I think he grabbed a rake. It was not, you know, two warriors going out to do battle. This is two idiots going out to see if someone had broken into the property. But the only way that we got in is in the front. In the front door, there was a broken window down at the bottom that you had to reach in and undo the doorknob and open up. We had 3 Dobermans at the time, and these were great dogs. They were afraid of nothing. It was a shotgun house. You could see all the way through the house. And my dad said, look, I'm going to the back door. You go in the front door. I'll go in the back. I'll let the dogs go in. You open the door and go in. If there's anybody in there, just swing away. And I said, okay. So I go to the front door. My dad goes to the back. I can see him all the way through. The piano's still playing. I reach in, undo the door. It's not cold or anything like that inside when I reach in, but I reach in, undo the door, and it's still playing. I open the door and throw the lights on. Nobody's there. My father and I are standing there looking at each other, trying to figure out what is going on. So we had the piano happen. Those are the 2 things that my parents will admit to to witnessing. And the rest of them are just little things that happened to me growing up. But it when I started making a list of the things that had happened just to me over the years, whether it was in that house or somewhere else, it got a little crazy. It got a little concerning, to be honest, because I've never been one of those people that, you know, that thinks I'm sensitive or whatever anybody wants to call it. I'm not. I think I just happened upon things, you know, at different times. And, you know, I still to this day, if I go stay at the house, I'll sleep in my old bed. And a lot of times in the middle of the night, I'll hear people talking in the room, and they'll be far away, but in the room, if that makes sense. A couple of times someone has come over and sat on the edge of the bed. But the weirdest thing that's happened in that room, probably when I was about 14, I had a buddy who was spending the night, and I had a queen size bed. And so I'm sleeping on one side, he's sleeping on the other. And it was about 3 in the morning. And there's this like rocking going on next to me. And my buddy Dave was a real heavy sleeper. And he was like the only kid that I knew at 13 or 14 who snored. And that was really annoying, because I, you know, if we would hang out together and ended up crashing each other's house, I didn't sleep because he snored so bad. So he's not snoring, but he's like rocking back and forth. And there's a window that from my vantage point, I can look out this window to the neighbor's house. And I can see somebody, the outline of somebody rocking my friend Dave back and forth. And I'm thinking, well, I'm trying to figure out what is this, trying to rationalize it in my little 14-year-old brain. I'm thinking, well, maybe my dad's waking him up early. He's got to go, something. But I said, who's there? And the rocking stopped. And whatever this was stood back up against the window, and I could see the outline of whatever this was, just maybe a third of the outline of a person standing there. And I said, again, who's there? Well, nothing. Well, my room is pitch black. And I could see this thing, whatever it was, walking around in front of my bed, walking over to my side, and I could feel its hand just about on my shoulder. Like if you take your hand and just barely hover it over your arm, that's what it felt like. It felt like somebody was about to touch me. And so I kind of jerk away from it, and before I know it, it's back over on the other side up against the window, and I can still only see about a third of it. So I'm freaked out, totally freaked out, because nothing like this has ever happened to me before. So I reach over and I turn on the light, and as I remember it, and this is 36 years ago at this point, as I remember it, when I turned on the light, it was no longer inside, but it was outside the window on the second floor, and then it just was gone. And we've never had anything like that happen since. I do know that there were stories, especially with this being a Southern plantation house. Of course, there were slaves, unfortunately, and there are stories of slaves trying to run away and hiding into trees, and you know the owner of the house shooting a shotgun and knocking a slave out of the tree, and he landed and broke his arm. I mean, there's all those little stories, but trying to put those together and trying to rationalize what this thing was, I just can't. I can't figure out what in the world that it would have been, but I do remember seeing some sort of shape in my room.
So I know you and I were talking before this interview, and we were talking about faith and things like that. How do you relate these experiences to what you believe theologically? I mean, we don't need to go too deep and stuff, and I'm sure you got, maybe you have more you want to share with these stories, but it's just something that I just thought of and stuff, and there's plenty of questions I could ask you, but I wanted to ask you that before I forgot.
Well, I thought about that too, because I'm a very devout Christian, and I struggle with when people talk about, you know, demon possession and things like that. I know people have witnessed a lot of crazy things that I can't even fathom. And, you know, you watch TV shows and things like that, and you go, oh, that's crazy, but I don't think it's real. And I don't know that I'm the best person to talk about what's real and what's not. And in fact, when it comes to things like, you know, ghost stories and this and that, and we've got friends that have told us stories before, and I'll tell them, like, I don't believe that for a second. Well, I'm telling the same stories, you know? So I feel like such a hypocrite doing that, but you know, I'm not buying it. I don't know what it is, but when it comes to faith, I think there are definitely a lot of times in the Bible where we see spirits, you know, even in, when Jesus is in the garden, you know, angels administer to him. And when they're, I was trying to think, is it Garden of Gethsemane where they were, where the transfiguration happened, where, Elijah and Abraham are on each side? I believe it's Elijah and Abraham. So, you know, there's the spirits of those two very important, you know, characters. You know, like you had talked about, you know, Saul seeing, or going to the Witch of Endor. And I don't know, do you feel like it's clear, and we could go down this rabbit hole, but do you feel like it's clear that he actually saw Samuel, or did she see Samuel and said, he's upset? I got to go back and really read into it, because it almost seems like she says, I see an old man, and he's not happy.
Well,
and then he knows who it is.
Yeah. But so I think you're right in that. But the thing is with that is, it doesn't say that there was anything other than the spirit of Samuel there in the present. If it was somebody writing the scripture and they're writing the story and it was demonic, they would have addressed it as demonic. But the writer scripture addressed it as the dead spirit of Samuel, not demonic.
Yeah.
And on top of that, what was said during that conversation came to fruition.
Demon, yes, it did.
Demons can't predict the future. They're not omnipotent.
Right. Yeah. Totally. And, you know, the other thing is this, when Jesus walks across the water, you know, and he's walking on the water and during the storm and they see him, they say, you know, is that a ghost? So this was in their culture. You know, this, the ghosts were in the culture. And so, and they're in every culture. So, I mean, even biblically, we're given examples of the fact that there are ghosts. And, you know, I had an experience a few years ago, both my grandparents, who were just the greatest people ever. My grandparents passed away. My grandfather's been gone since 06. My grandmother has been gone since 2012, I believe. And she didn't do well. After he died, she said that she saw him three times in the house. And she was not one of those people that would have stories like that. And so I don't know if maybe it could have been dementia, the start of dementia, or if she actually did see him. And I know she was terrified, and she would say things like, he's coming to get me, he's coming to get me. And that was really upsetting, because my grandfather never would have hurt my grandmother, and it scared her so bad. But after they were both gone, the family went up to their house, and I'm the oldest of probably seven or eight grandchildren, and so I had a very, very close relationship with him. And even though I didn't see anything, there was a presence that could be felt at that time. And we were all leaving, and my father said, hey, lock up the house and meet us at whatever restaurant. And I start to lock up the house, and I'm at the back door, and I'm about to walk out. And I stood there, and Tony, I know both of them were standing right behind me. I know they were. I could feel them there, and I was... I wanted to turn around so bad to see them, but I was so terrified. I just couldn't do it. And I left. And so a couple of years ago, my son and I went to help them kind of close down the house. They sold the house. And same situation. Everybody was leaving to go to dinner. Everybody was outside. And I was locking up the house. And I stood there and waited and waited and waited and nothing. And it just emphasized what had happened, you know, a few years previous, that something did happen. And I really felt like their spirits were there. And, you know, I don't think they were trapped at all. I don't think they were trapped at all. And it could have just been the vibe of the house that, you know, we spent so many Christmases and so many summers there that was in my head. But I can't help but feeling that they were there. And they were wonderful, wonderful Christian people. And my grandfather was an elder in the Church of Christ for a lot of years, just a really good man. And in fact, every story we heard about him after he passed away was just, your grandfather did this for me. He was such a good guy. He helped me out here and here, that brought us food, you know, just good people. And so I kind of feel like those spirits were there to say goodbye. And again, it could have been just me, you know, it could have been me just hoping, but and freaking myself out. I totally think it could have been that. But, you know, I think that people get tied to places. And, you know, I've had other strange experiences, you know, around the country. I do a lot of traveling. And I'll tell you one thing that freaked me out. I was working for a company in New York, and we were on Long Island, and staying at a hotel that was fairly new. And they had put all the salesmen up for a week. They were having trainings and meetings and all sorts of wonderful, you know, things that you don't even want to know about. And I'm in my room, and it was it was one of those suites. And the suites had a bathroom, and then it had a of course, connected to the bedroom. And then you would walk through a little opening, and there was like a seating area. And then there was a kitchenette, and then the door. And so if you were looking down on it, it looked like a C. You know, you walk in through the door, you go around the wall, and then you're at the room. So, or the bedroom. So I'm laying there, and I got some work done, laid down about midnight. I just bolted straight up, could not sleep. Something was wrong. Something was weird. And I sat there for a minute and kind of calmed down. And all of a sudden, this woman walks out of my bathroom. And she was probably mid-50s, red sweater, kind of, you know, graying blonde hair, glasses, and walks out of my bathroom, and which the door was shut. She walked out of the bathroom in front of the bed, around to where the sitting area was, out by the kitchen, and was gone. The door didn't open, door didn't close, nothing. So I go running out there, and out to the out to where the door was. The bolt is on the door. There's no way anybody could have gotten in or out. And of course, didn't sleep real well that night. And the next morning, I was having breakfast with the guys that I worked with, and I didn't really say anything. And the manager behind the counter saw me, and he came over and goes, "Are you okay?" And I go, "Yeah, I'm all right." And he said, are you okay? Is there anything wrong in the room?" And I said, "Let me ask you about this room." And I told him the story, and he goes, "Nope, we've never had anything happen here." And I said, "Okay, well, maybe it's just me."
That guy's a liar. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but he's a liar. He came to you, and it's like, "Are you okay?"
He can't.
And then he asked you twice, and then you're like, "Well, tell me about this room." And no, he knew there was something going on in the room, man. He knew.
Hey, well, he wanted us to come back is what he wanted. But the weird thing is, they had all of our information. Well, this guy called my company, got my name, described me to them, got my name and called me the next week. And he goes, "Can you tell me what happened?" And I go, "Yeah." And I told him, and I said, "Have you ever heard of that happening in your hotel?" And he goes, "Not in my hotel." He goes, "But I've been in the hotel business for 30 years. That is by far not the weirdest thing I've ever heard." But, you know, we didn't stay there anymore. I told, you know, the people that book our rooms, I said, "Please don't put me there anymore. I'll go somewhere else." I never stayed there again, man. But being on the road is just, you know, you run into some very weird things. And I mean, it's not connected to the house that we're originally talking about. And I don't think it's connected to me. I don't think I attract anything like that. I just think from time to time, I run into some weird stuff.
Yeah, I mean, and I think there are times where almost everybody runs into something weird. It's just, are you willing to acknowledge it? You know, are you the kind of person that, you know, even pays mind to things like that? Or do you think, "Oh, that was just weird. My mind's playing tricks on me." How many times do people say that to themselves? You know, "Oh, my mind was playing tricks on me." Maybe it wasn't. Maybe it wasn't. You know, maybe there's actually something going on.
Yeah.
So back to this first story. Now, you said about the time slip. Do you think that if it was a time, because, I mean, here's the facts. You saw something that was your dad, right? So you saw your dad from 20 years ago or whatever it was, and you're talking about time slips. You don't believe it was time travel, which, by the way, you mentioned about time travel where you said if it exists, then it always existed. That's exactly what I tell people. Like when they say, "Does time travel exist?" I say, "If it exists now, then it always existed, because then you can transcend time all at one time. And so time is now nullified for the person who holds the controls of time. And so I find that interesting. But the time slip thing, are we talking about maybe like, are you talking about like some kind of type of residual energy or what? Because I believe that science is far more complicated than anybody can fathom at this point in our human history. And I think there's a lot of things about our science and things that we don't even call science yet that we just don't understand. And do you think that residual energy could be part of that?
I do. Yeah, I totally do. And I mean, you know, I look at it and, you know, would my father ever be a time traveler? No, because he would think that it was foolishness and he wouldn't want any part of it. But it almost seems just like a recording of something that happened. You know, where's that idiot kid? Is he home yet? And I was home and he looked out to see if I was home and then he was gone. I mean, it almost seems that simple, but you know, my lovely wife, who I adore more than anything, was making fun of me, but she made a really good point. Could it be just some sort of time slip? I think it could.
Yeah, I mean, because the idea of the time travel, it's not like it could be your dad from the future coming back in time, because what you saw was your dad from the past, which means that your dad would have been a time traveler 20 years ago, never told you, and still refuses to let you know that the family secret is dad's a time traveler, right?
So. Right. Well, that picture of him and George Washington's always been a little weird, but you know, what are you gonna do?
Well, I mean, we're not talking about Disneyland here, man. Oh man. But yeah, I'll tell you, man, these are some interesting stories. Now, your parents had these experiences on the property. Did they have anything, you know, too crazy happen, or has it just been pretty just
no, that's it. Stuff? That's it. I mean, you know, there were times when, you know, windows would slam across the, you know, across the house, and all the windows are, you know, these are old windows. They've all been, you know, painted shut for 50 years, more than that. So, you know, you would just hear weird things, and they've never had anything. My son and I went to Atlanta he went with me to check on a couple of customers that I had down there, and he was just riding with me, and he was probably 16. And he's one of the most rational people I know. And he's an engineering student. So, you know, math and science are his things. And he had an experience outside the house one time. We were taking the dog. Now, if you want to talk about satanic, we can talk about this dog. But that's another thing. But anyway, I'm walking the dog out in front of the house, and it's dark outside. And he's talking to me. Well, then he turns around and says, "What are you doing over there?" And I go, "What do you mean?" He said, "I was just talking to you in the front yard." And he was talking to somebody. He said, "I saw the shape of somebody in the front yard and thought it was you and was talking to him." And he goes, It wasn't them. It wasn't you. It was something. I don't know what it was. And I turned around and it was gone. But he saw something in the front yard, very similar to what I'd seen in our bedroom, the same sort of shape. And then that same trip, we had gone to have breakfast with a buddy of mine, and we got back. We were about to leave to go back home. And we went into the house. It was just he and I standing there. My parents were on vacation. And we went back in to make sure, you know, everything's locked up and air is turned down and all sorts of things. And their bathroom is directly above their kitchen. We were in the kitchen getting a drink, and we heard somebody walking upstairs. Now, this is the only other time that we've ever heard anybody walking in the house. Someone was walking upstairs, and it sounded like someone had dropped a ball, and it rolled across the bathroom floor. It's a tile floor. So, you know, again, father and son team going up, you know, back stairs, front stairs on this one, and, you know, trying to make sure nobody comes down the stairs. And nobody's there. I mean, and that's the thing that drives me crazy. The end to every ghost story is always nobody was there. It just wants, I want someone to say, yeah, they were there. They were right there. And we talked for a while. But, you know, he and I both heard those things, and that was in the house. But my parents, never anything beyond the two stories about the piano and the footsteps in the hallways. Nothing.
Well, you know, it's funny you mentioned about the footsteps in the hallways, and it's just fresh in my mind. I like watching these YouTube channels and stuff that, you know, these guys go and they go through like old buildings and they record video, and, you know, they do some things that I wouldn't do, you know, but, you know, I would walk through old buildings and I would, you know, do it in the middle of the night and all that stuff. And if a place is supposedly haunted, I'd have no worries about walking through and just kind of hanging out and filming stuff. It's just when they cross that line of trying to communicate with something there, that's something that I don't rock with. But they were in this morning I was watching, they were in an old house, like 200-year-old house, supposedly haunted by demons and all this other stuff. And they were down in the basement. And honestly, like, this house was all boarded up, all windows, and the door they came through, they boarded up because they wanted to spend the whole night there. No excuses. Nobody was there. They've been in the entire house. They went down in the basement last. And when they're down in the basement, you just hear this dum, 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 like somebody just stomping across the floor upstairs. And I'm telling you, I'm sitting here watching it, and I was like, that, there's very few things that I would say would scare me, honestly. And that would scare me. The idea of hearing those thudding footprints after you've been through the whole house, that would put me on edge. I mean, outside of actually seeing like a freaking demon jump in my face and be like, I'm going to eat your soul. Like, I mean, sure, that would scare me. But I mean, the paranormal stuff, because of what I do and talking to the people that I talk to and everything, like, I've become very numb to this stuff, and it just doesn't faze me like it once did. But the idea of hearing footsteps, so I can't imagine what, I mean, I don't know how your dad moves on from that, you know, be like, oh, it's just, you know, the wind, you know?
Yeah, he's just a very practical, very rational person, and those things don't play in. And, you know, I'm certainly not upset with him. I'm glad that they haven't had, you know, more experiences that have scared them. It was a great place to grow up, spend holidays. It was really just a cool place. And it just, it would get a little weird. And, you know, it's funny you talk about demons and, you know, people going into these houses and welcoming things in. I've never used a Ouija board at all. Never will. And, I truly believe, you know, we talked about faith a little bit and, you know, people say, well, you know, how much power does God have in your life? And I think the correct answer for that and for any of these things, whether it's demons or, you know, power of prayer or influence by friends, you know, how much power does God have in your life? God only has as much power as you give him in your life and as much as you open up to him. And I think it's the same for a lot of these, you know, a lot of these demonic things and maybe just even the subject matter. Not even a physical or a spiritual demon, but just the subject matter itself. I think people get so bogged down in it. And I've had a lot of these things happen, and I've gotten to the point now where, you know, we've watched a lot of these shows, and, you know, whether it's, you know, paranormal shows, Bigfoot or you know, UFOs or ghosts, and you just see a lot of these people that have just kind of given their lives over to this, and it's all they know, and it doesn't ever really end well. It doesn't seem to really end well. It seems like there's a very specific stereotype that goes along with people that just devote their lives into, you know, not solving anything, but just living it, if you know what I mean. Just, well, this is just my life. It's like they've given over the bulk of their lives to these things, and I'm just not going to do that.
Yeah, and I think that really, that what you just said and stuff, it really comes down to how people view their lives, how people are conceiving the things that happen around them, and what they in their hearts believe is happening.
Right.
You and I have certain theological convictions that there are people who do not have. Therefore, they're willing to live with certain things more, and some invite it because they believe that, some people believe there are no such things as demons. That they believe in ghosts, and they believe that, you know, your spirits can, you know, whatever, like it's a spirit of somebody or whatever it is, but they don't believe in demons. So underneath that theological conviction, there's not a whole lot to fear. And so it's just, you know, living life with an entity, and if you're fine with it, then let bygones be bygones, you know? And so it really kind of comes down to how people view the world. And that's why I say it all the time on the show, and I'll probably say it till I'm not breathing anymore. And that's, you know, it really depends on how people view the world going into an experience as to how they're going to relay that experience coming out of it. You could have an atheist and a theist in the same room experience the same thing, and they will come out saying two different stories. Because they went into it thinking, or they went into it knowing certain truths that the other one did not believe.
Right.
So, you know, it really is a situational thing. And, you know, but that's why I enjoyed the show, because we can sit here and talk and have conversation with people and all that fun stuff. But Josh, man, I'm telling you, man, I really enjoyed hearing these stories. It really was a nice time talking to you.
Well, man, I appreciate you having me on. I love the show, and just, I think you're doing a bang up job, and I do hope you just keep going, because it's a lot of fun, and honestly I think you're helping a lot of people too.
Well, I appreciate it, man. I'm going to continue the show until there's no more people that want to be interviewed. You know, it is what it is. I don't plan on stopping this thing anytime soon. And right now we're booked with interviews for the foreseeable future. So,
You're not going to run out of material. I guarantee you.
No, I mean, there's 7.5 billion people on the planet. Of those 7.5 billion people, even if 1 million of them have paranormal experiences and 10% of those people contact me, I'm in business for the rest of my life.
Totally.
We're fine.
Yeah.
All right, brother. Well, thanks for talking.
You got it, man. Thank you so much, Tony. Take care.
Next up, we have Daniel coming on the show to talk about his experience with his family with the screaming La Llorona. Daniel, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Awesome, man. I'm doing good. So we are going to be talking about, and I'll let you say it, La Llorona. Is that how you say it?
Yeah, that's pretty close. It's La Llorona.
Yeah. La Llorona.
Llorona. There you go.
There we go. So we're going to be talking about that today. But I find it interesting is that we were scheduled to talk today, and I recently just started learning about this. And every culture has its own legend, kind of like this. But this specific legend, I just started learning about, and I heard it somewhere, probably on a podcast or a YouTube show. And, you know, it piqued my interest and I started looking into it. And then I saw that we were supposed to be talking today about this. And so I was like, wow, talk about a synchronicity. But you've had a strange experience, let's just put it that way, where you might have heard this screaming. And so if you could tell us about what the folklore is behind this. Let's just say, I don't want to say folklore as in a disrespectful way, but just like the legend behind it, and then let us know what you experienced.
Okay, sure. Yeah, we can start with that. And, you know, the legend that was taught to me was a legend that I'm sure plenty of, you know, Mexican and Mexican-American people have heard probably 1,000 times. And so, you know, where I come from is American Southwest in Arizona. And there's a lot of different folklore and old tales that go on in those parts. And, you know, of course, a lot of it has to do with the Mexican culture. But, you know, from what I was told and from, you know, what was taught to me was that there was a woman. And the tale goes, and the legend goes, is there was a woman who fell in love with a different man in that she was married with. And so the husband comes back to find an affair, and he actually, you know, they get in a big fight or whatnot, and because she can't be with the man that she really loves, she drowns herself or drowns her children and kills herself. And it's always some type of version of that you hear. Another version is that the husband came back and killed them all and drowned them in the river.
Yeah. And the one that I was hearing was that the lady was abandoned by her husband and out of grief killed her children. Well, grief and anger, I guess. But, it's one of those things where a lot of legends or a lot of cultures have similar type of legends. And the idea of a woman spirit, you know, prowling an area because of lost loved ones or a baby, a child. I mean, it's a very common thing, a woman in a white dress, which is a common description with this, right?
Yes, that's correct. And there's a lot of different versions. And, you know, as growing up and hearing the different versions, it all kind of, you know, there's all very similar formalities with the whole story. But the gist of it is that it was a grieving woman who had lost her love, lost her children. And because of that, you know, she would come periodically during certain conditions to make herself known. And that's kind of the creepy thing about this story was that when I experienced this and when I heard, you know, La Llorona, the way it was taught to me, you know, I experienced this at the age of innocence. Then I was only 4 or 5 years old. I was a little boy. I didn't know too much about right or wrong, evil or good, but I was at the age where I witnessed it, I felt it, and it shook me to my core. And, you know, it's one of those things where I've never experienced anything that dramatic and scary, you know, in the 40 years that I've been on this rock. It was that moment where it was life-changing, even though I didn't quite know what it was.
Yeah. Well, why don't you walk us into what had happened? I know it was like an entire family event.
Yeah. So, you know, like I said, this was in American Southwest. And I really don't want to get into the specifics about certain things because I'm sure that a lot of people that were there that witnessed it
to include my mom feel a different way about it. And I'm not sure if they would appreciate me giving the specifics, but, you know, I'll do my best. And so on the weekends, we would travel to go see my grandparents. Our family was very close at that time. It was my parents. We probably lived about 100 miles away from my grandparents, and they lived near the Mexican border, the Mexican-Arizona border. So on the weekends, when my father was off, we'd go down there and see my grandparents. And it seemed like every time we'd go down, it was great times. It was a huge party. Food, drinks, music, and all of the family would be there at my grandparents' house to be together. And, you know, growing up in a Mexican-American culture, the family was very important. So we try to do that as often as possible, according to schedules. So I remember this specific time that we went down there was just like any other time. We went down there, had dinner, you know, adults were drinking, playing music, dancing, and, you know, typically it would last into the night. At that point, you know, I'm sure at that point I was put down in bed somewhere. But being a young kid at that age, I had a fascination with cars. So when I woke up in the morning, I grabbed my bag of cars, and they were Hot Wheels, and I'd put them in the living room, and I'd sit there and play with these cars. Well, it was just like any other time before that we had been there, the same thing happened. I woke up in the morning, probably the first one to wake up. I'd get my bag of cars, go to the living room, and on the rug, I'd play with my Hot Wheels. And now, we were on the border. My grandparents' house was on the Mexican-American border in Arizona. And because of that, my grandfather, he had a pack of dogs that, you know, lived in the house and lived in the yard. And I remember he had a German Shepherd, and he was the alpha male of the whole area. I mean, he was a massive dog. He was fierce. He was brave. And he would control all the other dogs. And my grandfather had some hounds, some smaller dogs, some mutts. But they would all kind of follow the German Shepherd's lead. And that morning, I was playing with the cars on the carpet in the living room. And I remember looking outside, and I can see the German Shepherd. And he was out there on the porch, just as usual, kind of keeping an eye on things. You know, he would keep a lookout, and there were several other dogs around him. It was a normal day. The sun was out, birds were out, they were chirping. He was alert, moving around. And in a moment, everything turned, everything changed. The skies got a little bit darker. I remember everything just got silent. I didn't hear any birds. I was, you know, still playing with my cars, and I looked outside, and all of a sudden, the German Shepherd was all the way close to the door, which was really strange, you know. I remember thinking about it. I was like, "Oh, that's kind of strange." He's backed up. He's backed up, and his behind's all the way against the door, and all the dogs were, you know, cuddling around him. And you know, as a kid, you don't think much of it. And you know, these thoughts and some of the reasons I have are because of you know, later deliberations about what actually happened and the stories that I've heard from other people growing up through the years. But I remember it was a real strange feeling, because it just got really calm and everything just stopped. Everything grew silent. And a moment later, I heard something that to this day I've never heard. And there was no way anybody can replicate the sound that I heard. And you know, the story and the tale of La Llorona has been replicated in some B movies in Hollywood. And I think there's even one that came out in the past year or two, and they're pretty bad. I mean, you can't do that type of experience, any type of justice by putting it on television through Hollywood. It will never replicate the horror and the reality of what's really out there. And, you know, at the age of 5, I heard it. And the year was about 1980, 1981, I believe. And I didn't hear it but for 10, 15 seconds when the entire house erupted and got up and ran. And they were, you know, they were trying to find me. They're trying to locate where I was. And I believe it was my mother that first got me. She found me and she pulled me. And she covered my ears, so I couldn't hear it. And all the ladies, all the women of the house, you know, being a strong, you know, Catholic background, immediately congregated to the center of the house, and they began praying in the rosary. And I remember my mother covering my ears, and I could still hear it. There's no way that you can't hear something like that, even if you tried to drown it out. It was like somebody was screaming directly in your ears. There was probably about anywhere from, you know, a dozen to 15 people in the house. It was a rather large house. And everybody heard. There's not one person in the house that did not hear it. And I was the youngest person in that house. And it's like if somebody were to be in both sides of your ear, screaming as loud as they possibly could, but in a wailing way. There's no way that you can experience something like that and just not be in total fear. It's horrible. this happened for maybe not even a minute. And as soon as the conditions went from light to dark, and after that period of time, it went the same way from dark to light. And when this demon stopped wailing, it was like nothing had changed. The birds were back out, the sun was out, the dogs went back to their normal positions. And everything was just like before. Now, this dog, he was an alpha German Shepherd. I remember him being a massive animal. I remember my father would pull up into the yard, and he had a truck. And this German Shepherd would be so happy to see him that, you know, my pops would roll down the window. And, you know, he would lean into the truck and he would put his paws and his forearms into the truck, and his whole head would come in into the cab of this 4x4 truck just to be able to look him on the face. So he was a massive animal. He was a powerful animal. And when that light turned to dark that first time and he cowered up against that door, he was crying like something was beating him. And when I figured out, before I can even, you know, at the age of 5, you don't really know much. I just knew that the dog was being hurt. And I remember, you know, trying to get out there and figure out what was going on with them, and being smashed up by my mother and being pulled to the center of the house away from the windows. It was a very, very strange moment. And even as a kid, you know, I picked up on certain details and certain actions that everybody took. And there's no way that, you know, at the age of that I am right now, that I can make any of this up. It can't be fabricated. These are specific details and specific circumstances that happened that only one could bring up if they were actually there. And the reason why I say that is because about 10 years ago, I came back from a deployment overseas. And me and my father came out to visit me. I was living in another state at the time. And he came out to visit me. And, you know, we're in the backyard barbecuing, having a few drinks. And I brought this up. And Tony, the look on his face was, I've never seen my father so white and so wide-eyed before in my whole life. His jaw dropped, and he couldn't believe that I remembered this and I brought it up to him. And the only thing that he could say was, I cannot believe that you remember that morning. And, you know, we talked about it a few times, and, you know, I was five at the time, and so I was very young. You know, this is in the age of innocence, most definitely, and it took me a while to process, to actually figure out and to make sense of the situation and to come up to my own conclusions of what actually did happen. And it took me years and years to get to that point, but putting all the pieces together really made me think, hey, you know, there is definitely something out there, and not all things that are out there are good. And to that day, I've never been so scared in my life. And I've been in some pretty hairy situations. I've been in combat multiple times. I've had, you know, direct fire engagements, indirect fire engagements. I've seen people twisted and blown up. I've seen body parts everywhere. But, you know, nothing has ever been that scary to me. It brought fear to me. It brought panic to me. Even at a young age where I really didn't understand what was right, what was wrong, what was evil, what wasn't. Nothing has ever been that scary and that fearful to me. I mean, it shook me to my core, to the point where even to this day, you know, not much of anything really could affect me the way it had back then. Because I've witnessed it firsthand. I heard this demon, you know, screaming. I heard this demon bringing fear and terror to my whole family. And there's nothing that can ever prepare you for anything like that. Or I don't think there's anything that ever can convince you that that is anything else. You know, you hear a lot of people talking about, well, I heard this, but it must have been a coyote or a bobcat or this and that. This was something totally different. It was something that was, it was super normal. Not paranormal, not supernatural. It was super normal. And these are the things that do exist in our lives and in our world. And I think we have to be true to ourselves and understand that there are good forces out there. There are evil forces out there, and there's a fight. And there's no way at the age of five that I could ever have come to that conclusion. And it took me years and years of deliberation and reading and studying and hearing eyewitness accounts that confirm I did hear what I did hear. And there's no way that I can make a story up like that at that young with those details that have affected me for the rest of my life.
Yeah, I mean, you have the confirmation of your dad who, you know, confirmed that your memory is accurate when he's like, I cannot believe you remember that. Do your parents ever, you know, indulge you in their ideas as to what this is? And have they ever seen it? You know, is this something that the whole family knows has been going on for a long time or anything like that?
Well, it being a folklore in the American Southwest, and especially with the Mexican American and Mexican cultures, it's just something that is there, it's present. It is there. It affects everybody. It can't be witnessed, and you have to be careful, and you have to be fearful for these things. And at the same time, you have to be strong in your faith because these things can affect you, and they can get to you. my parents eventually got involved in a religious group that really doesn't believe in the demons or angels or anything like that. They're just more factual about things as according to what they believe in their philosophy and their philosophy and their theology. My mother, I remember her talking about it to my grandfather. This was years ago. But after the whole switch of religion things, she claims that she heard everybody talking about it, but she didn't quite hear it. So she's a bit of a denier. And I think that has everything to do with her change in theology and the religious organization that she affiliates with. I will tell you this. I didn't talk to anybody about this for the longest time. My grandparents, and this is a different grandparents from the ones that actually witnessed it on that night. This was from my mother's side, and they lived in a nearby city, but they weren't there that night. It's a whole different set of grandparents. My grandfather, he was a very spiritual person. He was very in tune to everything, and he was a great man, great father figure to all of us, and he's a World War II veteran, and you know, he had been through a lot of things in his life, and there would be certain conditions, and this was when I was a bit older, you know, maybe preteen and stuff like that. I'd be, like to be running the streets, and I would like to be out and about, you know, with my cousins and my uncles, and there were certain times and during certain conditions where he would physically go outside and call us back in because he felt that that the spirit, La Llorona, that it could be out that night. And he would get very, very paranoid and very worried, and he would, you know, he would wrangle us all up in and pull us inside the house. And he was a man that grew up in the mountains of Arizona. His father, they were from California originally, and they migrated and they moved back east to Arizona to work the mines, the copper mines. And I remember him telling me that there was three occasions that he heard La Llorona himself as a kid growing up. And it would be the same conditions every single time, Tony, that he would be out there worrying about us, calling us, you know, wrangling us in into the house because he didn't want us to be out there. And the conditions were always something similar, you know, dark, overcast, no moon out. Everything was quiet, you know, the proverbial calm before the storm. When those conditions hit, you know, he would be nervous and he would be looking for us. And I remember he'd get into his car, honk the horn so we can get back to the house. Because, you know, he had experienced it as well. Now, you know, my grandfather and my grandmother, their house that I experienced this in, there was a lot of paranormal activity in this house. And growing up, going down there and spending the weekends there, it was very scary. And the older I got, I realized, you know, the less time I actually wanted to spend there in that house. And I love my grandparents. You know, they were caring, they were loving, they were beautiful people. But, you know, there's something in that area, there's something in that house that brought fear to me on a level where I didn't want to go. I didn't want to stay there. And even as a kid, I would fight and fight and fight. And recently, one of my aunts from my mother's side, told me that she remembered how strange it was when I was a kid that I never wanted to go there, and that I would fight my parents about going there and staying there because I just felt something there, you know. And it started with La Llorona. After that happened, I didn't want to be in that house. I don't want to be anywhere in that house. And that was just a small portion of the things that were going on in that house. There was a room inside that house, and this was you know, aside from La Llorona and that whole story and that whole myth. But there was a specific room in that house where none of us, and when I say us, I mean the people in my generation, my cousins. They're probably about eight of us. That we didn't want to go in this room because there was a lot of things that would happen in this room. We would see apparitions. We'd try to go that down in there, and we'd get pulled from our legs, from our feet off the bed. And it was just, even when that didn't happen, even if you passed by that room, you just felt that you were being watched and surrounded. And my grandparents knew, again, they were also very spiritual person people, and they knew that we all felt it as well. And I remember there would probably be about 30 people in the house, all family members down there for functions, weddings, and whatnot. And all of the kids, all of the cousins, you know, we're all around the same age. We'd go to the opposite side of the house to sleep on the ground and sleep on the couches and the floors. And my grandmother would come in and she would ask us, you know, in Spanish, you know, she would ask us and say, hey, there's a whole room back there with two beds. Nobody wants to go back there and sleep. And we were like, no. You know, there'd be eight of us saying, no, we're not going back there and sleeping. And that room always remained vacant. And this was the same house that, you know, that we all witnessed La Llorona. Now, I do remember as that voice went away, as that scream went away, and everything went back to normal, and that morning that I witnessed it, I remember everybody in that neighborhood, they congregated to a certain intersection, and this intersection was faced the Catholic Church. And all of the families in the houses went to the center, and they were talking about what was happening, and they all heard it. And there probably was about 50 people out in the middle of the street that, you know, corroborated, you know, the stories and what they witnessed and hearing the screams of La Llorona. It was absolutely crazy. And it's even more crazy now that I think about it. And I try to make some type of sense of it as an adult. It's absolutely mind-boggling. And I experienced that when I was five, and I put all this together. So when I bring this up to the adults that was there, they can't believe I remember that story in detail I did. I mean, it really shook me, and it really shaped me, and it made a lasting impression on me for the rest of my life to this day.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like it. I mean, the way you talk about it, it seems like it's still an impactful thing. Do you think that the dog was physically being attacked during that episode?
I think he was. Because the way he, it sounded like he was being killed, like he was just being pulled apart. I've never witnessed anything like that. And I was a mere few feet away from that door and from that dog. Yeah, man, it was intense.
Yeah, I can imagine, man. Well, it sounds like there's some crazy stuff going on there for sure. What it is, well, we'll let the audience decide, you know? But it's definitely interesting, man. And, you know, I don't think that, one, I don't think it's crazy. And also, I think that the family... I think your family probably knows a lot more than they're even willing to talk about. You know, it's probably one of those things where it's just like, let's just kind of, let time forget about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, when you go through something like that, Tony, I think if everybody has their own way of processing information and being defensive, and a lot of that, you know, is just their way to just really forget about something like that, and that traumatic that it can even happen in the first place, and there's no way to explain it. So a lot of it is just, you know, defensive mechanisms to cope with, and it is definitely something that has shaped my thinking and my way of life to this day. So, you know, I think that this has affected me in a lot of different ways, but one thing I want to talk about, I believe it has made me more in tune and more aware of what is really out here in our world. And I can't really explain what it is, but I can explain what I feel, what I felt, and how it has affected other people. So, there's a specific time where I was deployed and we were in a combat environment. And we were engaged in direct fire, and we were trying to maneuver on some enemy that was embedded in the schoolyard. They were in a schoolhouse. They were sniping at us and you know, opening fire from the school. So we went into, you know, our movement techniques and our procedures to assault this group that was in the school. And I mean, we've done it a few hundred times. It was just like clockwork. It's just something that you go through. It's a battle drill. It's something that you don't think about. You just automatically start engaging in order to envelop the enemy. And for some reason this time, I still don't know how it happened or what made me say this or what clicked in my head, but as soon as we started our maneuvers onto this enemy, you know, something hit me, and I just stopped everything, and I said, hey, you know, I got up on the net on the radio, and I said, hey, you get all the dismounts back to the trucks, because, you know, we're in up-armored trucks, and we had MRAPs and up-armored Humvees, and we had fire support with 50,000 240s. And they were rocking, but something hit me and said, get your people back in the trucks. Because I was all on the line of protection. So I radioed ground units to get back in the trucks. And, you know, everybody was like, you know, what the hell's going on? You know, we're about to get busy. We're going to roll these people up. This needs to happen. And I said, listen, there's no arguing right now. Just get back in the dang trucks. And so they did. And about 10 feet, you know, 15 feet, they're moving, they're getting closer. And I was just nervous, man. There was something that came over me, and I couldn't understand it. I couldn't explain it. But I was really nervous. I just wanted them back in the trucks. And the moment they got back in the trucks, there was an earthen mound that was running north to south that my troops were lined up in. And as soon as they started, you know, regressing towards me, that whole mound blew up. You know, I didn't think nothing of it. Hey, it's combat. Sometimes you make decisions. Sometimes you make good decisions. Sometimes the decisions aren't that good. But hindsight, you know, that's just the way it is. But I remember a few months later, a few of my troops are talking to me, and they're saying, hey, why in the heck did you call us back that day? I said, what day? I said, what day are you talking about? And they said, okay, that day we were lined up on the berm ready for assault. And I said, I can't explain it to you, man. I just had to get you back. I just knew that there was something, and I had to get you back. You know, and there was probably about three or four of them. And they were pretty touched. So there's a few things, I think, that when you experience something like that, you just kind of more in tune with your natural or supernatural world, if you will. But it has made me the person that I am today, for better or worse.
So you think that that experience kind of gave you access to an intuition that maybe you wouldn't have had otherwise?
Absolutely.
I got you.
Yes.
It makes sense. I mean, I understand where you're coming from. You know, we go through we go through life and we have certain experiences. And one of the biggest tells is when you go through an experience, remembering how you felt during that experience, because how you feel during an experience can actually lend to in the future when you're going through something, if you remember how that previous experience felt, you might be able to recognize and understand what's going on around you before, you know, something crazy happens.
Right. Yes, exactly.
Well, that's interesting, man. I'm glad that you, I'm glad that you listened to the intuition, and I'm glad that you, you got out okay. But most of all, I'd like to say thanks for serving in the military, man.
Hey, thanks for your support, Tony. I appreciate it.
For sure. What branch of the military did you serve in?
I served in the Army.
Gotcha. Okay, cool. Yeah, I don't know if I mentioned on the show and stuff, but I was very close to joining the military when I graduated high school, and I chickened out. I got scared, so I didn't go. But there's a lot of people who aren't chickens, and they go and they serve, and I tip my hat to them. So thank you very much.
Hey, thank you, and thank you for what you do. I appreciate it. Everybody has a purpose, and you know, if you weren't here doing what you do, I would have never been able to talk to anybody inside of my close circle. So I do appreciate what you do as well.
Well, that's the show, everybody. I really hope you enjoyed it. And if you did enjoy it, please share the show with your friends, because that's the best thing you can do to help the show grow, is just to share it with your friends. I was thinking about it today, and we have episode 256 that we just came out with. And I was thinking, man, I can't believe I've been doing it that long. That's a long time. A lot of shows we put out, and we hopefully will have a lot more coming down the pike. As long as you guys enjoy the show and keep sharing it, people will keep emailing the show their encounters, and we'll record them and present them to the world. And until next week, friends, stay safe, take care, and remember, the truth will set you free, but first it'll piss you off. Bye.
Look, I don't wanna fight you. You gotta know that I meant it when I said that I liked you. Or maybe just the idea. I bought it, don't want it, now return the shit like IKEA. Apologize, I'm not a mind reader. I need attention, so I try to be a crowd pleaser. It was easy till it got a little deeper. Now I don't know how to deal with you, so I'ma disappear. I'm a ghost. Now you see me, now you don't. I'm a ghost. Every time you hit the phone. Inconvenient to change your background, but let's back down so you can see this is a problem I don't want to put myself in front of. That's why I blocked you, cause I'm not the guy you should rely on. I spy on, creep on, I don't know. You just ain't that type of hoe. If I don't holler, let me go. I should have said it, but I didn't, and I won't. I'm a ghost. Now you see me, now you don't. I'm a ghost. Every time you hit the phone. Hate me, cause I'm a shady, 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 shady. I don't get reception. Missed your call, but best believe I got the message. Why don't you just leave me alone? I think it's lasted way too long. I thought by now that you would know, but since you don't. Hit the phone. I'm a ghost. Now you see me, now you don't.
Forget the pressure to overhaul your life. The new year doesn't need a new you. It needs you.
grounded, supported, and ready to grow. Grow Therapy helps you make meaningful change at your pace and on your time. Whether it's your first time in therapy or your 50th, Grow makes it easier to find a therapist who fits you, not the other way around. They connect you with thousands of independent, licensed therapists across the U.S., offering both virtual and in-person sessions, nights, and weekends. You can search by what matters, like insurance, specialty, identity, or availability, to get started in as little as 2 days. And if something comes up, you can cancel up to 24 hours in advance at no cost. There are no subscriptions and no long-term commitments. You just pay per session. Grow helps you find therapy on your time. Whatever challenges you're facing, Grow Therapy is here to help. Grow accepts over 100 insurance plans, including Medicaid, in some states. Sessions average about $21 with insurance, and some pay as little as $0, depending on their plan. Visit growtherapy.com/get started today to get started. That's growtherapy.com/get started. growtherapy.com/get started. Availability and coverage vary by state and insurance plan.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal, $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
It's time to get organized this new year with Menards. Update your closet system and add style today with Closet Culture. Choose from 2 closet finishes and 4 colors of shelf boards to create a functional yet stylish closet solution that matches your home decor. Check out all our Closet Culture closet kits or view our weekly flyer on Menards.com to see all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Forget the pressure to overhaul your life. The new year doesn't need a new you. It needs you. Grounded, supported, and ready to grow. Grow Therapy helps you make meaningful change at your pace and on your time. Whether it's your first time in therapy or your 50th, Grow makes it easier to find a therapist who fits you, not the other way around. They connect you with thousands of independent, licensed therapists across the U.S., offering both virtual and in-person sessions, nights, and weekends. You can search by what matters, like insurance, specialty, identity, or availability, to get started in as little as 2 days. And if something comes up, you can cancel up to 24 hours in advance at no cost. There are no subscriptions and no long-term commitments. You just pay per session. Grow helps you find therapy on your time. Whatever challenges you're facing, Grow Therapy is here to help. Grow accepts over 100 insurance plans, including Medicaid, in some states. Sessions average about $21 with insurance, and some pay as little as $0, depending on their plan. Visit growtherapy.com/get started today to get started. That's growtherapy.com/get started. growtherapy.com/get started. Availability and coverage vary by state and insurance plan.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
I was a soldier, then a veteran, a husband, and a father. And with my VA home loan, I'm a homeowner. No down payment required and no PMI. Build your future with the VA home loan. Get what you earn. Visit choose.va.gov.
Not all veterans are eligible for this hyper amount of benefits mentioned here.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner. So you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details. Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s.
Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects.
With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last. Get started today for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com.